The first order of business is the minutes of January 24th. Do I have a motion for the minutes? Representative Cantrell moves the minutes January 24th. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of approving the minutes for January 24th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I oppose, say no. Motion passes. Okay, so the first bill we have on the calendar is House File 113. Representative Beckerfin, the motion, because this has a fiscal note, right? Yeah. Okay, so the motion is that this be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Judiciary Finance Bill. Chair will move that. Representative Beckerfin, welcome to the committee. Tell us about your bill.
Yeah, so thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is kind of an odd one. I've had a lot of questions about it, but it's important. So I thank you for hearing the bill and giving us some time here this morning. So this issue was originally brought to me by a city manager in my district. Originally, when he brought up this issue, I honestly was skeptical of whether that was actually accurate because it just doesn't make sense. And so what this would do is to kind of get the rest of the Ramsey County suburban cities at a level playing field with the rest of the cities in the state. So House Research Verified had them check on this last year. So currently, the fine revenue proceeds that are collected, Hennepin County gets 80%. St. Paul and every other municipality in the state gets two-thirds of the revenue, and for whatever reason, Ramsey County suburban cities only get 50% of the revenue of those fine proceeds. So it doesn't take money away from St. Paul. It doesn't directly take money away from Ramsey County. It's general fund dollars, and essentially we're just asking that Ramsey County suburban cities at least be at the same level as all the rest of the cities in the state. Not even asking for special Hennepin County treatment, just to get the Ramsey County suburbs at the same level as everybody else. So it's, and then I have several folks from, I think we have four or five different cities from Ramsey County that I believe would like to share some testimony.
Excellent. Please, if you can, approach and state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us to testify. I am Pat Frudgen, the city manager for the city of Roseville. We do support House File 113. I was unaware of this disparity until Representative Beckerfin made me aware of this. And as I looked at the situation, I'm really not sure what logic is being used to differentiate us between other cities in greater Minnesota and throughout the region. For us, I think the impact would be about $14,000, so it's not a lot of money in the whole scheme of things. However, we always want to look at other revenues besides our property tax levy to help fund our services. So having this additional dollars will be helpful in us to continue our mission and serve our residents here. So we would ask you that you please consider this favorably and pass this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Proton?
Trudgen.
Trudgen. Okay, thank you, Mr. Trudgen. Any questions for Mr. Trudgen? Okay, well, I have a question either for you or Representative Beckerfin. Do you have any sense of what the history was? I mean, I heard there's some rumor about someone was mad at White Bear Lake. I don't even know what that's about. What's the deal?
I did ask both the Reference Library and House Research to try to get an answer to that question. And anecdotally, I've heard that there at some point in the 90s that White Bear Lake may have been talking about moving to administrative penalties, and some other Ramsey County folks weren't happy about that. It honestly doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and if anybody was here in the early 90s and could shed some light on maybe what those discussions were off the record, I imagine there were some discussions behind closed doors that didn't happen in the committee hearings and any record that I was able to find.
Well, Representative Beckerfin, that I remember the administrative administrative tags debate from White Bear Lake. That was in like 04, 05, or actually it was during the whole budget, the plenty budget cut years, I remember. And this, you said it was the early 90s that this was passed?
It's as far, I mean, that's when it looks like this change was made. And I think there were separate times that things were amended and that Hennepin County got more and that St. Paul was brought up. But I think when they brought St. Paul up, they didn't bring up the rest of Ramsey County.
Okay. All right. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, testifiers, I know in statute it depicts where the fund goes. But I'm just wondering what the other counties across the state do, because I know some of it goes to the state, some of it goes to the local counties in the division to help pay for the county's portion of the court costs.
Okay, can you maybe restate that, Representative Beckerfin?
I can't speak for the other counties. I guess I haven't, maybe House Research knows, but it's, as far as I can tell, everybody else, the additional amount goes to the general fund, and the municipalities keep the rest of the revenue themselves.
Well, and I thought, Representative Beckerfin, I had thought that Chair Johnson was asking about the disparity, like every other municipality in the state is two-thirds. Is that right, Representative Beckerfin? Okay.
Or more,
because in Hennepin County.
In Hennepin County, they're special.
Now, the municipalities, of course, they're special in Hennepin County. We all know that. It's been made clear to us. Now, those municipalities in Hennepin County get 80, or it's just Minneapolis?
I believe it's all of Hennepin County.
Okay.
And I see House Research is nodding, so.
Okay, Chair Johnson.
I was just wondering about the other counties throughout the state.
The other counties throughout the state, perhaps Research can answer that. It's two-thirds. Is that right, Mr. Johnson?
Chair Lesh, Representative Johnson, that's right. All other municipalities get two-thirds.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Chair Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the person that's not getting the money that's going to be going to the municipalities would be Ramsey County? Who's not getting the money?
No, that's a great point for clarification. So if you talk, it's the charging authority, I believe, right? So if you're charging a felony, it doesn't matter because it's a county issue. Although different county attorneys have come forward throughout the years and gotten different jurisdictional authorities. For example, in Ramsey County, Susan Gertner, when she was county attorney, wanted to make sure that she prosecuted all cases involving guns or kids, whether they were gross misdemeanor or felony or whatever. So she has special jurisdiction there. I don't know if I'm assuming that the county fine schedule applies to that or the city. Does it depend on the prosecuting authority, Representative Beckerfin?
Yes, I believe so. So this would only apply to things that are prosecuted at the city level.
Okay, so
and it's general fund dollars. It's coming out of the general fund. Right now, half of the proceeds are going to the general fund. We would change it to a third.
So let's use an example, if we can. Maybe this helps, Chair Considine. If you have a driving after revocation, run-of-the-mill misdemeanor, and you pay the surcharge, which goes straight to the general fund, $84, and the law library for you, whatnot, and then the judge assesses a fine of $200. We're talking about that $200 fine, right? In the rest of the state, two-thirds of that goes to the city that prosecutes it because cities have jurisdiction to prosecute misdemeanors. And then the one-third goes to the general fund. Is that right, Representative Beckerfin?
Right.
Okay. But in suburban Ramsey County municipalities, Roseville, Maplewood, North Oaks, etc., currently they only get half. Is that right? Okay, go ahead, Chair Considine.
I think you've actually answered my question. So it's the state general fund, not the county's general fund.
Oh, that's
good. Okay, that's right. I'm good then. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions for Mr. Trudgeon? Okay, you've got another testifier, Representative Beckerfin?
Sure do.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Mark Miazga. I'm a member of the Falcon Heights City Council. One of the things we pride ourselves on in Falcon Heights is having an efficient budget. And in the wake of the Philando Castile shooting, we spent considerable community resources coming up with a task force and implementing recommendations around law enforcement and a lot of very character-based hiring for law enforcement and engaging law enforcement so that they do more community-based policing. That took a lot of time. We spent about 80 hours to create a grant application to get $30,000 to make some of those efforts happen. We didn't have enough money to do it. So my main point in being here is to let you know that it may seem like a small amount of money. That money makes a real difference, not only in our partnership with Ramsey County, but in helping our community. We loved engaging with our community and coming up with these very powerful recommendations that are making a very real difference in people's lives. But it would be great if we could put that money to other other places in the community as well, like our parks and our planning and other things. So this money would make a real impact in Falcon, and we're trying to use this as a model for other communities facing these issues across the country as well.
Thank you. Now, in Falcon Heights, they call them council members or counselors, or what's the word?
Let's go with council members.
Council.
Yeah. That's bad. I get called different things.
Weird thing where it's counselor. I'm like, you guys don't have law degrees. Stop it. Okay.
But who's only one of us.
Yeah. Okay. So, but I would like to point out, for members of the committee, now you were 1 year ahead of me and Representative Mueller. Is that right, council member Miazga?
That is correct.
Okay. So, Hamlin Law School, class of the late 90s, represent. Okay, thanks for being in here. We all kind of hung out together back then.
Get John Choi in there, too.
It's a little weird. Yeah, John Choi was in the whole mix. And, okay. All right, thank you very much. Any questions for Councilmember Miazga? What's that? Oh, Representative Liebling.
So, Mr. Chair, not a question for him, but just a comment that I guess if we want money from this committee, we better go get somebody from the class to come in and advocate for it.
It's better if you were from the class. Yes. Chair Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just big fan of community policing and the character hiring practices, so pleased to hear that you're doing that.
Thank you.
Excellent. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesh, I'm sort of wondering, all our cities and our government municipalities across the state, whether it's counties, cities that have law enforcement to write these citations, they're all having the same issues as the county, as the others, the counties, the cities in St. Paul, or Ramsey County. I'm just wondering if we're better off treating all cities across the state the same, or should we just select certain cities in certain areas to have special benefits? As a state, we want one Minnesota. Maybe we should treat our cities as one and treat all of them the same.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Johns, for that. And I think that's a great point. And I think Representative Beckerfin's bill is one step in that right direction to reach some equity, but we're going to talk about. Wait, does anyone here represent Hampton County cities?
Yes.
Right here. Oh, yeah. That's right. Oh, that's right. Okay, I'm sorry. Representative Barr, that was awkward. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, Councilman, correct me if I'm wrong here, but what I heard you say is that by us bringing the going from a half to a two-thirds, you would be able to basically use fine money to fund your parks.
No, I'm saying that if we could take that money to help with our law enforcement budget, that frees up money elsewhere in our budget.
But you're going to be using fine money to...
No.
What? Hang on a second. We're going through the chair. Okay. Representative Park, go ahead.
My apologies, Mr. Chair.
That's all right. You're good? Were you just making a point, or do you have a question?
I'm good.
Okay. Any other questions for the author or... Councilmember Miazga. Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that given the question that we had before from Representative Johnson, I don't know if it's really clear, and maybe you could clarify again, or maybe Representative Beckerfin needs to clarify again, because what I'm understanding about this bill, and I'm not from Hennepin or Ramsey, I don't have a dog in this fight, but what I'm understanding is that Ramsey County is now different, and they want to align with what most of the rest of the state is doing, with the exception of Hennepin. Is that correct? Maybe Representative Beckerfin could just make that crystal clear that what we're doing is treating more cities the same, not giving anybody a special privilege in this bill, right?
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So right now, all of your cities, other than receive two-thirds. My cities and Representative Moeller's cities only get one half. So right now the inequity is with our cities. It's unfair to our Ramsey County suburban cities. And so what this bill is get us at the same level with all of your cities and municipalities. So that's what this is doing. It's not asking for special treatment. It's saying we're getting unfairly dinged. Everyone else is getting treated more special than we are. We're just trying to be at parity with everybody else. Everybody else gets at least two-thirds, and we only get one-half.
Thank you.
Surely, that's good. Okay, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, so I'm a freshman, also representing Hennepin County, and I just don't understand why the state gets any of this money. Why wouldn't it go to the city and the county, because they're the ones processing the fines? Can anyone enlighten me on why they get any of it?
Well, do you want to enlighten her, Mr. Johnson? I don't know either, really.
Chair Lesh and members, this deals with when we had budget problems in the state in the mid-2000s. Historically, the money was divided between the municipalities and the counties because the counties incurred some costs, particularly related to courthouses, et cetera. That changed in 2006 when the legislature passed an amendment that directed that money. Instead of that remaining balance going to the counties, that money was sent to the general fund to help with the general fund shortfalls that existed in the mid-2000s.
Thank you.
Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So being new and not very familiar with this issue, I would recommend for the committee's consideration that we stop sending any of this to the general fund and just let the counties and the cities have it all.
Well, thank you, Representative Robinson. You know, this is one of those teachable moments, okay? And, I don't know former Governor Plenty that well. Saw him up at Tommy Roccavina's funeral the week before last. You know, he's an affable guy. But during the mid-2000s, it was huge, y'all. Solve the budget deficit without raising taxes, okay? There was this whole fiction that we were doing, and do more with less was, I think, the mantra. And, of course, we didn't do more with less. We just shifted the costs around a lot. It was this giant game of three-card Monte that we did in a lot of different ways. And it was awkward because it was political. And so this was just one of those areas. So one of the bills that Representative Zerwas had last year was one of the other major things we did was the $79 surcharge plus the $6 law library fee or whatever that we stacked on top of everyone else, the $680 charge to reinstate your driver's license after you blow 0.08, all these little things that we did to shift the cost, not to mention the extra $100 you had to pay for your kid to go out for football at the high school or whatever, okay? So all of those things are trickling down because, as we know, it flows downhill. And I had a bill this year that reverses those costs that we saddled people with on, let's say, driving without a license or something, you know, that or any fine, actually, the surcharge, which you technically already pay for through your taxes, we shifted to fees on top of people. So I had forgotten, Mr. Johnson reminded me that this is one of those things we did back then. But the shadow of all those bad policy things are being revisited upon us now, so that I'm off my soapbox, but that was a soapbox thing. Any other questions for Councilmember Miazga or Representative Becker-Finn? Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to add a comment to that because I've been going back and forth here with DFL research staff because Rochester, and I don't know if this is in – it must be everywhere else, too. There's a surcharge on parking tickets, right? And it's a pretty hefty surcharge. I forget right now. Maybe it's $7 or something like that. And it goes right to the state. Now, parking tickets, you'd think that, you know, municipalities get to decide how much they want to charge people who overstay the meter or something like that. And Rochester's not really stiff parking compared to, you know, here. But we get this surcharge that's on top of the ticket that really just goes to the state. And this is a constant source of friction because the city would like to be able, you know, feels it can't raise parking fines by itself because, you know, people, they have this other bigger chunk right on top of that. So I just feel like this is a moment that I need to say that, too, because why do we have that? It's exactly what Chair Lesh was describing. putting these fees, these surcharges all over the place were an attempt to say, we don't have to raise taxes in the state. We're gonna get some money here, there, and wherever we can. And some of these are still actually rather burdensome. But the reality is, if you get rid of that, you've got to replace the revenue with something else. And so as long as we still have a no new taxes, we can't really raise taxes at all mantra in the state, or it's exceptionally difficult to do that, we cannot, you know, unless you find ways to just cut out all that money, and Governor Pawlenty was not able to do it, despite all the rhetoric. He only could do it by shifting all these different costs. So I just wanted to bring that up because it is a sore point for my city, even though I don't have a dog in the fight that this bill is about. But since we're talking about these things, this is not the only place where we're still seeing those lingering effects. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesch, Representative Liebling, I can sort of answer that question for you. As somebody who used to write those citations, in town, if it was an ordinance, you'd use the city ordinance, and it would not go to the courthouse. If you write a citation that actually has a court date, then the surcharge was added to help pay court costs and goes to the state to help offset the court costs by the people who had to use the system.
Thank you. Any other questions for the author? Are there any members of the public who would like to come down and weigh in on this? Seeing none, everyone's waiting here for the next bill, I guess, right? Okay.
And Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Beckerfin.
And I do have representatives here from the city of Arden Hills and Vadnais Heights. I'm not sure if they want to add anything else or if they feel like, okay. But for the record, we do have the city of Arden Hills and the city of Vadnais Heights also represented here to support the bill. So and Mr. Chair, I would say that we all have a dog in this fight because it's a fairness issue for Minnesotans. So just ask for your support.
Okay. Thank you. So we're looking at $129,000 and then $173,000 in the out years. Is that right, Mr. Walls? For the cost?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that would be the loss of the general fund.
Thank you. All right. Seeing no other questions, then, Chair lays House File 113 over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Judiciary Finance Bill. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Scott and your entourage, please take the table to present House File 54. Representative Scott moves House File 54, and I know that you've had some conversations. We will discuss those conversations throughout the course of this hearing, Representative Scott, but at least as it stands now, the referral is to the General Register. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr.
Okay.
Chair. Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, thank you. This bill originated from, it was brought to me by Chris Busey, and Chris, Mr. Busey used to run Minute. He used to be the CISO over there, and he's now with the Legislative Auditor's Office, and he brought this issue to me back, I believe it was in October or November, and we met on this issue, and basically his concern was that he had, even when he was at Minute, he operated under the assumption that if there's a data breach, regardless of the reason or the intent, that the people whose data was breached should be notified. And I believe it was the Office of Data Practices that brought it to his attention that there's actually two requirements before it can be classified as a data breach in current statute. One is that there's an unauthorized acquisition of the data, and the second, that there's intent to use the data for an unauthorized purpose. And we all hear almost daily about data breaches, and certainly if we're whether we're one of the people that whose data was breached or not, we certainly sympathize with the people whose data was breached, and we feel, I think, probably everyone around this table believes that those people ought to be notified that their data was put at risk. And so what we did was we just removed the intent piece as being a requirement under current statute that would constitute a data breach. So this bill, we took it through the Legislative Data Practices Commission, and it received overwhelming support to bring this to the full legislature, and that's why I introduced the bill this year. As is custom around here, we posted the representative or Chair Lesh and his staff posted the bill that was going to be heard. I believe that was posted last week, so it's been out there in the public domain for quite some time. And yesterday afternoon, I received a couple of inquiries and some possible issues with the bill going forward. So I'm sure those people are here today. They probably want to speak on the issues that they have with the bill. So when the chair opens it up for those folks to come forward, you'll hear what their concerns are. I also want to say that the League of Minnesota Cities and the Minnesota Association of Counties were in my office last week, and they told me then that they would be neutral on this bill. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will open up for questions from members or however you want to handle it.
Thank you, Chair Scott. Now, I don't see Mr. Webster here. But is there anyone else who would be here to testify in support? Raise your hand if you're testifying in support of the bill. Okay, folks just kind of saw it. Maybe I could have research go into a little more depth about what we're trying to prevent. Members, you have in your packet a letter from Mr. Webster dated January 23rd. Regarding the disclosure of data, which then he then redacted by the Duluth Police Department. And unless you're a Chapter 13 data practices nerd, it's a little complicated. So I'm wondering if research can just kind of give us a lowdown of what we're trying to prevent here. Mr. Hopkins.
Mr. Chair and members, under current law, this is Section 13.055 in the Data Practices Act. This section prescribes when a government entity has to give notification for people whose private or confidential data was subject to a breach in the security of the data. The issue addressed by House File 54 is how a government entity determines when there has been a data breach. Under current law, there's been a breach in the data, which triggers these notice procedures, if a person views or takes private or confidential data without permission or statutory authority, and this is the important element for purposes of House File 54, that person has to have the intent to use the private or confidential data for non-governmental purposes. What House File 54 does is eliminate that intent requirement. So a government entity wouldn't have to know the intent of the person who views or takes private or confidential data in order to determine whether or not there's a breach. A breach would occur simply if a person viewed or took private or confidential data without permission or statutory authority.
Thank you. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesh, I'm wondering if in a little more layman's turn it would be if somebody's sending out an email and it unintentionally attaches a file with a whole bunch of private data to somebody. That would constitute a breach. When the person's information was inadvertently sent out, it'd have to be notified.
I think that's a fair characterization, but Mr. Hopkins, do you want to speak to that?
Mr. Chair, under current law, in order for there to be a breach of the data, the person receiving that inadvertently addressed email would have to have an intent to use the data for non-governmental purposes. This bill would eliminate that requirement.
Thank you. Okay, other questions before? Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for House Research, so just as I'm understanding this is only being changed for purposes of when notification must be made. Is that right? It doesn't change, when you just look at it sort of in isolation here the way the bill is, because we don't have the whole section, just the, we don't have here in the bill what Section 13.055 all of it is, right? So am I right about that it only would change it for purposes of putting more of a duty on government, if you will, we'd be sending out more notices, but that's the only change that would really happen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling and members, yes, that's correct. The, 13.055 sets forth notice procedures that a government entity has to go through when there's been a breach in the data. So by changing the definition of what a breach in the data, breach in security of the data is, the law changes when the government entity has to go through those notice procedures.
Thank you.
Chair Considine.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I was just kind of scratching my head.
Got it. Okay. Well, I notice when you scratch your head, Chair Considine. Okay. There being no other questions now for the author, are there members of the public who want to come up and speak to this? Okay, Ms. Beyer-Kropinski is here. Okay, and then Hennepin County will be ready to come down after that. Ms. Beyer-Kropinski, welcome back.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Lori Beyer-Kropinski with the Department of Administration. I wanted to let the committee know, as Chair Scott has mentioned, that yesterday the Governor's Office and Minnesota Management and Budget reached out to get some technical expertise as well as some legislative drafting assistance from Admin's Data Practices Office, your subject matter expert. They've identified issues that uniquely impact state agencies that they have discussed with Chair Scott. Admin really appreciates the opportunity to work with them as well as the author to develop some possible amendment language. The executive branch agrees with the goals of the bill to ensure that individuals are notified when their data has been released, when it poses a risk to them. State agencies are just looking to clarify when those notices are required. And I can stand for any questions you might have.
Any questions for Ms. Beyer-Kropinski? Okay. There being none now, Ms. Beyer-Kropinski, can you stick around? Because there might be some questions for the other folks to come up, testify on it.
Mr. Chair, members, of course.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. We've got Christine Lottie Johnson, and I'm sorry if I butchered your name, Hennepin County Data Compliance Officer. Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. My name is Christy Lottie Johnson, and I'm the responsible authority and data compliance official for Hennepin County. And as Ms. Beyer-Kropinski mentioned, we aren't necessarily opposed to the language, but we think that the language as it's proposed, we need to be able, counties and government entities need to be able to complete a risk analysis prior to notifying individuals to determine whether or not notification would be appropriate. I do have a couple of examples where Hennepin County was the subject of some phishing attempts, and we needed to send out notices to people who were on a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet had the first name, last initial, and the name of the account number of a department that would be charged for interpreter services. And in that case, we had to send out notices to people because of how private data is defined in the Data Practices Act. In the Data Practices Act, just the fact that a person's name and the fact that they are receiving some type of human services, that is considered private data. But when we sent out the notices, what we got back was a lot of anxiety from people. What does this mean for me? You know, am I at financial risk? And the answer was no, you're not at financial risk. Somebody knows that you received services. Maybe somebody knows that you received services for Spanish interpretation. And that was it. And so part of what we want to do is we want to make sure that when we notify people, we're striking a balance and taking care to not raise anxiety further than what it needs to be raised.
Any questions for Ms. Lottie Johnson? Okay. Ms. Lottie Johnson, can I ask you, when did you receive notice that this bill was going to be up before this committee?
2 days ago, maybe.
Okay. Well, and I'm not going to pile on here. You're a government official who's come forward to testify, but I would just reiterate what Chair Scott said, that this wound its way through the Data Practices Commission, and it's been noticed for a couple weeks. And I think Chair Scott just found out about a lot of concerns in the last 48 hours, which I think would be frustrating to me. Was it 48 hours?
Less than 24.
Okay, less than 24. And I would also state, Ms. Lottie Johnson, that for good or for ill, your concern about anxiety of people when they receive a notice really is the purview of this committee, not really yours. Not to put it a little too bluntly, but if the effects of the policy we make is having that impact, that's something that we're accountable for, because we have chosen to make a broad, categorization of in favor of protecting folks, which sometimes does have that bad effect.
Correct.
But I guess I would just state that that's the purview and decision making that we got to decide here.
Correct.
So it's not something that you're really in the position of having to do, because you just got to follow the law. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to the testifier. You mentioned that there was an evaluation, some steps that had to be taken in terms of this decision-making process. Could you spend a few minutes just elaborating on that a little bit for us, please?
Well,
Ms. Lottie Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, at this point, we have the analysis that's in front of us around the intent. And if there is the intent, at this point we do that. What we've been thinking about and looking at is an analysis around the risk to the individual, and whether there are ways that we can do an analysis that would be available for someone if they would like to audit it or look at it. But if we could do an analysis to determine what the level of risk is, similar to what 325E.61 has in our statute, which is around the private industry and how they need to notice. And they need to notice if there's risk related to social security numbers, driver's license information, and bank account information in conjunction with a name of an individual. In those cases, Hennepin County has gone above and beyond what is required by statute. When we have situations when we've or inadvertently and released information, or someone has had access to information such as social security number, driver's license, bank account, along with a name, we not only notice, but we also offer identity protection, which is not required under statute. But we believe that it's the right thing to do to protect people as it relates to financial risk and identity theft.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Ms. Lottie Johnson, are you in charge of kind of the data compliance for the whole county, including the Sheriff's Department and the county attorney as well?
Mr. Chair, no, I'm not. Thank you. The way it is set up is that every elected official is their own responsible authority, and then government entities are also required to have a responsible authority. So I am the responsible authority for Hennepin County, non-elected, and then the county attorney is his own responsible authority, the sheriff is his own responsible authority, and then also within statute, the welfare director is his or her own responsible authority.
Understood. Okay, thank you. Well, I know that members of this committee have expressed dissatisfaction with Mr. Webster's attempt to get information out of those other entities, so I had to ask, but thank you for the answer. Chair Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure I'm understanding what you're saying, because, I mean, this is obviously really important. But so the language in the bill that Chair Scott is trying to delete here, it sounds to me like you have the issues, and I think your concerns are all valid, you know. I mean, I think we all, notwithstanding kind of the chair sort of taking that concern off of you, I think it's just normal for all of us to worry about, you know, where is the proper balance. But with the language in current law, are you sort of looking at that language as allowing a kind of a risk assessment in your decision making? That's what I'm kind of struggling with a little bit. The part about how is private data defined, that's not on the table today. That's elsewhere in law, and if there's a concern about that, then we have to look at that. But this issue with intent, it seems to me that, you know, is the concern that, you know, when you've got this intent piece and you can say, well, there wasn't any intent, so it's not really that much of a risk, therefore, we're not required to notify people, and we can kind of make more of that balance ourselves. Is that kind of how you're looking at that current language?
Ms. Lida Johnson.
Representative, Mr. Chair. No, that's not the way we're doing that right now. Right now, if it's private data, we notify. What we would like to do is we would like to propose some language around a risk analysis. And actually, as part of the risk analysis, we're not looking at the intent of the recipient. We have some other language that we would like to consider besides the intent.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, thank you for that. And, you know, I think I can't speak for anyone else, but I think that it's probably appropriate to have some sort of risk analysis in there. But I'm not sure that this language that Chair Scott is trying to delete is giving us that. So anyway, I just wanted to make sure I was clear, because I know you kind of went into a few other areas that are obviously related but not the same thing. So right. Thank you.
Okay. Chair Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Scott, given that you have found these concerns raised in the last 24 hours, is there something in there that might cause you to want to pause, reevaluate, since you didn't know about it recently?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Chair Considine, and thank you, Chair Lesh. I think what Chair Liebling has uncovered here is that the issue may not necessarily be with this bill. This is simply taking intent away. They're already notifying people with the language the way it currently is. So there's a two-step process right now, or two criteria that have to be met before they are required by current law to notify someone that their data has been breached. And even though the intent may not have been ill intent in the example that they gave, they still notified people. So they're already interpreting the law much like probably most agencies already are around the state and government entities. And why Mr. Busey brought this forward was that most government is already operating under the assumption that any time anyone's data is breached, the person should be notified, regardless of intent. Because very much there's a lot of innocent, you know, comings and goings of email and releases of data, and we know that there's not always ill intent. But most agencies and government entities are erring on the side of caution already. So I think we're actually talking about two separate issues here, long and short of it. Am I willing to work on this? Sure. But I'm just not sure that their concerns pertain to this specific bill language. That makes sense.
Thank you. Yeah, Chair Carlson.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the next stop for this bill?
It's going to the floor, Representative Carlson.
Okay. Mr. Chair, based on the author's comment about willing to continue to work on the bill, is there a reason to take a pause and have this be further looked at and allow for others that have expertise and experience in dealing with these types of issues to take a closer look at this? It seems like it's being rushed. I guess that is a question. Is there an opportunity to table this to allow for further conversation with other subject matter experts?
Well, Representative Carlson, I'm going to leave that up to the author. I think having wound its way through the Data Practices Commission, this having been talked about for a year, that I don't think is being rushed. However, I do get the sense that Chair Scott is willing to work with folks who have concerns on this. It probably is my intent, if it's amenable to Chair Scott, to bring this back in a week and give folks with concerns a week to really put forth proposed language that will pass muster with Chair Scott. But I'm going to leave that up to you as the author, Chair Scott. What do you think?
Yeah, that's fine, Chair Lesh, and I'm glad to work with people if, you know, but what I'm concerned about is there may be a separate bill here that's not even is what they're addressing. So,
okay.
But we can discuss that when we meet.
All right.
Glad to do that.
Thank you. Then that's what we'll do. But you know what? I shouldn't have said that, because I want other folks to step down and state concerns first.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take my blurting out, hey, maybe we'll hold off on this, to be any indication that you got extra time to talk about this, because you really don't. So if there are other folks they want to put on the record their concerns about the bill. That's what this hearing is for. So come down right now and put them on the record, okay? No one wants to come down. Okay. Chair Johnson?
Chair Lesh. I look at this bill and I read it. I've seen what's some of the news reports of what's happened lately over, even at the state level and sometimes at the city levels, where emails are inadvertently sent out with, attached with information. There was no intent. By our current law, because there is no intent, no notification has to be given out that your personal data was released. That's wrong. I want to thank Representative Scott for bringing this forward. The Data Commission has worked very hard on it. I would just as soon just move forward this bill, get it to the floor, because any time, especially the state, inadvertently relieves private personal data, the people whose data was released should be notified immediately.
Thank you for that statement, Chair Johnson. I would note that the only concerns, even, you know, tepid concerns as they've been characterized, I shouldn't say that, that sounds pejorative, but nominal concerns as stated by Ms. Lottie Johnson are the only ones that have been stated on the record. So I don't know what else Chair Scott is supposed to work with in terms of crafting any comfort language between now and a week from now, but I really would hope that any of y'all that have additional concerns, that you would bring them to her today, written out, not just an oral, hey, you should really do this, but written out in the form of proposed language change. That's the only way it's going to be helpful to her and to this committee. So with that, we will, Chair lays it over for a week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, members.
Chair Scott. Now, members, tomorrow we'll have an informational hearing from Civil Legal Services as well as a bill from Omnibus Prime last year, House File 2309, a bill related to public safety, enabling the reporting of information related to the use of electronic device location tracking warrants. This was my bill. Is this my bill?
Yep.
Oh, it's my bill. Okay. So, members, the statement between Majority Leader Gazelka and Speaker Hortman at the beginning of session was that this non-controversial, the non-controversial portions of Omnibus Prime from last year, and I don't even know if that word's been trademarked, but I'm sure a reporter probably gets a quarter every time I say it, Omnibus Prime, there's another quarter, that we could pass those this year without an issue. And so the attempt is to hear those provisions of bills that this committee and other committees have already heard, save the freshmen, in an expedited manner because they were supposedly non-controversial. Now, because those bills hadn't been dropped yet, we have the language from last year. It's out there. It's in the public. But it will be noticed as HFXXXX. But it is the language from 2309 last year. The effort for that is complete and total transparency to the public of what we're considering, that it's the same language. If it's different language or if it's been tweaked, then we'll notify them of that right at the beginning too, and we'll hear that. But, you know, if it becomes controversial, then, you know, that's a separate issue. So we'll have to deal with that at the time. But I mostly tell members of the committee, just so you know, what we're actually hearing, why it's on as a House file with no number yet, because it hasn't been dropped this year. It was dropped last year. Oh, so maybe we will have a number by tomorrow, depending on, although we don't have a session between now and then, so it won't. So, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that explanation. I'm concerned that if the bill language isn't exactly the same, of course, we're within the 24-hour period for introducing amendments, but because there was really no language posted until yesterday, and that language is technically last year's language, can we even do this? Or do we have to hear it on informational purposes only?
Well, it kind of, Trish, Scott, yeah, it is informational purposes only. We don't have possession of the bill, so we can't even move the bill.
Okay, so this is just informational.
This is using the time that we would later use when, you know, and then when we do have the bill, then, you know, we can actually take an official action on it.
But, so we're just kind of vetting it tomorrow, Mr. Chair, and then when it comes back with the official numbers and so forth, then we can act upon it then.
Correct.
Great, yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. And members, I told my CA to book these things when we have the time now, because when we get closer to deadlines, we're not going to have the time. So we're trying to burn this time now is the whole intent. Okay. Representative Grossel.
If it helps, Mr. Chair, I've got a couple bills that were in that omnibus bill that you could look up that I've already dropped.
They're over there with Chair Scott. Okay. Thank you. Any other comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, committee is adjourned.